when Janice Erlbaum started volunteering at a shelter for homeless teenagers, the same shelter she'd lived in 20 years earlier. She became fast friends with Samantha, a brilliant junkie trying to clean up her troubled life. The book about those times, Have You Found Her, begins as a memoir about friendship and hope, but turns into a disturbing mystery. It's published by Villard, and I'm very pleased that it brings Janice Erlbaum to the show today. Hello.
Hi there.
Story begins with you becoming a volunteer, as I said, at the same shelter for teenagers in New York that you'd once lived in. How did you end up there when you were a teen?
Well, my mom was involved in an abusive relationship. And, you know, even at age 15, I felt like I had better taste in men than she did. So, you know, they would fight and get back together, and she'd call the cops and change the locks. But eventually I realized she's not going to leave him, so I have to leave. And it was a tough decision. It was a very painful decision, but I think the right one.
How long did you live there?
I stayed at the shelter for about 2.5 months. And then they got me into a group home where I lived for about a year before I was able to put my relationship with my mom back together.
Because we often hear about those being bad experiences. Was your experience at the shelter and the group home bad?
I am incredibly grateful to both the shelter and the group home. I think that kids who leave home and wind up on the streets have a much worse time than I did. I was indoors. I was fed. I had adults who were interested in my welfare looking out for me. So was it fun? No. But you know, definitely better than it could have been.
And that gratitude is the reason that you decided to volunteer at the same shelter?
Well, I thought that was the reason. I thought it was, oh, I want to give something back, you know. But I think that there was a much deeper psychological reason underlying all that, which was that I needed to go back and see for myself what I had lived through, how bad was it, and could I somehow fix it by trying to fix somebody else?
Well, and I assume that's one of the reasons you've given your book the title, Have You Found Her? You're looking for yourself and you're also looking for somebody else.
Exactly, exactly.
Did you have any experience working with troubled teenagers before you volunteered?
Well, I had some sort of unofficial experience in that I was always drawn to teenagers and, you know, sort of they would find me and I would act as an unofficial mentor. But no, I had no volunteer experience and I really had no, you know, social work credentials or anything like that. I was just sort of a well-meaning do-gooder.
But I guess you were doing the things you'd wish that people had done with you.
Yes, I was. I was. I was really listening. I was really trying to encourage the artistic kids to be more artistic. But listening to their stories was really the first and foremost priority for me.
And was that something that came out of your discussions with the people at the shelter? Did they give you any advice?
They did. That was their advice. Their advice was, you know, it's not about you. It's about these kids. And you're not a social worker, so you can't be getting them into programs and everything. What you can be doing is providing emotional support. And that was really what I came in to do. I will provide emotional support for these kids.
And they also told you not to get to pick favorites.
They said, don't play favorites, don't get too involved. And I said, right, right, right. And
you became known as the bead lady.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Because I was having trouble getting close to the girls just by sitting there, I decided to bring in some jewelry making supplies. And I thought, well, I'll lure them over to my table with these shiny, pretty things. And more than that, it gave them something to do. It was a fun activity. And they could concentrate on the beads. And they didn't have to be making eye contact and having this soul-searching moment with you. It was like, hey, we're just hanging out making beads. And
that's very Martha Stewart.
It was very Martha Stewart.
When did you first meet Samantha, Sam?
Sam. I was, I guess I had been volunteering for about 9 months when I met Sam. So this was November of 2004, I think the week before Thanksgiving.
And despite the advice of not picking favorites, you ended up breaking the rules for Sam.
I did. And you know what? I'm not the only one. She was really so remarkable. She was just so incredibly intelligent, and she was so relatable, you know, whereas a lot of these kids had very poor social skills. She would make eye contact with you, and she would smile, and she would say thank you. And, you know, she was incredibly appealing. She was a favorite of many people on the staff, whether they admitted it or not. But I certainly was more drawn to her than most.
What about her dramatic story? She was a runaway.
She had one of the worst life stories I'd ever heard, and I'd heard a bunch 9 months into volunteering. But yeah,
and you'd had a certain troubled experience of your own.
I had met troubled kids. I had been a troubled kid, but her story really took the cake. She had been on the streets since she was 12 years old, fending for herself. You know, prostitution, theft, drug dealing. You know, she was covered in scars and in track marks and in homemade tattoos. And she was really living the life. She was pretty hardcore.
And then she ended up hospitalized with a serious infection.
Shortly after we met, she punched a wall and she needed surgery on her wrist, and the wound became infected. So right around Christmas of 2004, yeah, she was in a hospital, and I started to visit her every day.
Do you think that all of this brought out maternal feelings in your part?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I really did. I really started to think of her as a daughter, which would have been strange because I was 34 years old and she was 19, except that many of the girls at the shelter said, "Oh, miss, you're old enough to be my mother." And I thought, that's right, because if I had had a kid when I was 16 or 17, this is how old she'd be.
And I'm sure some of those kids were born to mothers who were in their early teens.
No doubt. No doubt that these were the daughters of some of the girls that I had lived with, even.
Did you ever wonder whether Sam might be dangerous to get close to?
I did. I did wonder. I'm not so much like she was going to put me in any kind of physical danger or financial danger, but I definitely knew that my relationship with her was becoming emotionally all-consuming. And I worried about that, and at the same time, I felt almost powerless, really, to do anything except continue on this path. I mean, I made her a promise. I said, "I'm going to be in your life," and I felt like I would do anything to keep that promise. So,
and despite just how screwed up she was in and out of the hospital, spent time in a psychiatric ward,
yep,
and in detox. It seems like every time something good was about to happen, she would get sick or relapse or do drugs. And then she told you she was HIV positive.
That was the biggest blow. That was the biggest blow. I mean, everything else was sort of predictable. When people are leaving a rehab treatment, they will often go a little bit berserk because they don't want to leave safety. You know, she didn't want to leave the shelter, so she would pull a big stunt. She didn't want to leave detox, so she would pull a big stunt. But, you know, when we found out that she was HIV positive, that was sort of like, That was came out of the blue, was unexpected, and was the biggest blow.
Despite that, you wanted to be made her legal guardian.
Well, you know, at this point, I've known people who have been diagnosed who have lived long, healthy lives, and I thought, well, you know, this is not the end. This is she's young and she's resilient, and if anybody's going to beat this, she will. But now she needs my help more than ever. I mean, you know, to
and
negotiate.
And you felt that strong?
I felt very, very strongly. At this point, we had been in each other's lives for 8 or 9 months now, and she was pretty much a daily presence in my life. I felt very strongly. My partner, Bill, also felt very strongly about her. It seemed like the right thing to do.
And you say she helped you as you were helping her.
Well, she did, because I was still acting like a teenager myself. I was still, you know, I had a heavy marijuana addiction. I still sort of thought of myself as a kid. And in relating to her, I was the adult all of a sudden. And I found my power and I found my strength. And whereas I used to sort of cower around quote-unquote adults, then I realized I am an adult and I've got to start acting like one. And so she really helped me to grow up.
Janice Erlbaum has written a book called Have You Found Her? This is her second book. The first one was called Girl Bomb. It's published by Villard. What did your friends and family, well, you said that Bill thought it was a good idea. What about the other people? What did they think about your friendship with a homeless former junkie who relapsed a lot?
Well, I think they understood. I think that they had their concerns, but I think they understood psychologically where I was coming from, that this was something that was very important to me and very important to me to see through. So,
but you didn't see through in a larger sense. When did you start realizing that some of the things Sam was telling you weren't true?
Too late. I don't think I realized in time. I really, really had invested.
But she didn't have AIDS.
She did not have AIDS.
Now, this is, I've always wondered about this. I worked with somebody years ago who told me he was HIV positive, and he just didn't seem like he could. This is before they came up with the cocktail. He's still around.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he continues to work at the station. And I'm sure that he made it up, but there must have been a reason. Perhaps he wanted people to think something about
that
I wouldn't want people to think about me.
Well, you know, our heart goes out to people who are suffering from a disease, much more so than somebody who is depressed or anxious. you know, there's still so much stigma and misunderstanding of mental illness that, okay, I have a physical illness, then everybody will feel sorry for me. Everybody will take care of me. And she really loved being in hospitals. She put herself, we weren't the only ones who thought she was HIV positive. She spent 2 months on an adolescent ward in one of the better hospitals in New York City. And people were stymied. They did not know what was wrong with her. They thought she had an autoimmune disorder. And what she really had was called Munchausen syndrome, where you fake or induce illness in yourself in order to feel that kind of attention, to feel that kind of love. It's a devastating, devastating illness. And I, of course, wanted to stay in her life even after that was revealed. It was like, well, I didn't leave when I found out she had AIDS. I'm not going to leave when I find out that she has Munchausen's either. I'm gonna stay the course, as they say.
But she was in the hospital because they thought she was on the verge of dying. They gave her painful spinal taps,
yep,
injections into her eyeball.
That was a tough one.
She suffered through all that pain knowing that she had made herself sick intentionally.
Yep. That's how virulent this disease is. It's a terrible, terrible disease.
Is there any treatment for Munchausen syndrome?
There is some treatment, although not a lot of people are able to get it. Munchausen is very hard to diagnose, and there isn't a lot of awareness about it, so it's not caught very often. And then usually when patients are confronted, they take off and they take their story elsewhere. I mean, you know, we've seen...
Or they write a memoir.
Or they write a memoir, exactly.
And then they get caught.
Exactly. And, but then they tend to start over with their story someplace else because they're so used to portraying themselves as a victim. This is the only way that they can feel good and feel secure. So,
you ever find out any reason why that happened? She had told you that she had... abusive parents, she'd been living in the streets. Did you wonder whether anything she had told you was true?
I did wonder, and so I did my best to find out. And I did eventually track down her real parents, and I tried to get to the heart of the mystery. But, you know, everybody is going to portray their side of the story the way they want. I will never know what really happened and what really didn't with her.
Did you ever ask Sam about the Munchausen syndrome?
Sure I did.
And what was her answer?
Well, you know, she was extremely evasive. She didn't want to cop to it. And as soon as she could, she cut me out of her life because she did not want to face what she had perpetrated. So, you know, I am left with as many questions as I have answers.
Well, how did the diagnosis of Munchausen's even come up? Was it because doctors had tried every other possible cure and realized that she wasn't ill?
It was, she had done a really good job of keeping myself and the other people involved in her care separate from each other. And when we all finally got together, and I was the one who pressed the issue. I said, what is going on here? I must know. Tell me, you know, all of the information. And I'm the one who said, oh, no. I think something is going on here that's not a physical illness. So I was actually the whistleblower there. And, you know, it's an unofficial diagnosis, but there's a doctor named Dr. Mark Feldman who wrote a book about Munchausen, sort of the premier authority, and he agrees, you know, based on the evidence that I compiled, that this is what she suffers from.
What about her parents? Did they know that she was a compulsive liar?
They did. She had actually spent some time on the streets, according to them. She left in high school, and she did have a serious drug problem. I mean, there were certain things that were true about her story, but a lot of she had self-induced illness before, so they were aware.
Did you ever get to the point where you became her legal guardian?
I did not. No, she blocked me from becoming, you know, in many ways.
Maybe she understood that
yeah,
it would be bad for you. I suspect she had real affection for you.
I suspect so, too. You know, she was still in the hospital when my partner and I were going on our honeymoon, and she remarkably got a little bit better just around the time that I was like, wow, are we even going to be able to go on our honeymoon? And I kind of feel like she allowed us to go on our honeymoon. She sort of gave me that gift because, you know, she didn't want to ruin everything for me. So, but then, of course, as soon as we got back, declined right on time.
Do you have any idea where Sam is now?
I do have some idea where she is now. I believe that she's still in the program that we got her into. I don't want to identify that program. I believe that she's still there, which is good, which is a positive outcome for her.
And do you know if there is any kind of a cure for Munchausen?
There are people who have been cured. There are people who have managed to stop injuring themselves and putting themselves in the hospital. So there is a cure, but it requires a tremendous amount of patience on the part of a really good analyst.
Well, one of the clues, by the way, was that she knew too much for somebody who'd been a runaway. She had just too many skills. She was a little too brilliant.
She was a little bit too brilliant. But at the same time, I had met young women who did. Homeless people spend a lot of time in libraries, and that's a fact. So, you know, she was so good. She had been homeless. She had lived on the streets. But she was so brilliant that I think some people did suspect. She's too good to be true.
Do you still volunteer at the shelter?
I am not currently volunteering at the shelter. I wonder if they'd even have me back, knowing how far I crossed some of the boundaries. Of course, you know, if I were to do it differently or to do it again, I would do it differently. But one of the things I would do is I wouldn't go back to someplace that had so much psychological import for me personally. I think I'd start over someplace else where I could really, it could be about volunteering and not about fixing myself.
Well, you had planned to write a book with Sam. In a way, this is that book, except Sam didn't participate.
Well, she participated in the plot. She did not participate in the writing, although she made up part of the story. So, yeah. And if she contacts me, you know, I'm happy to share in the royalties, such as they may be.
Did you write Girl Bomb after this?
No, Girl Bomb came first. I had just finished Girl Bomb, actually, when I met Sam.
Janice Earlbaum's latest book is Have You Found Her? It is published by Villard, and she'll be reading from Have You Found Her tonight at 7 o'clock at Blue Stockings Bookstore. And if you want more information about that, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org or just show up at Blue Stockings. It's at 172 Allen Street between Rivington and Stanton Streets. And I want to thank you so much for coming by to talk about her.
Thank you so much.
And should I be warned if I meet somebody named Sam?
No, we've changed the name. We've changed some of the physical details. Don't want to hurt her. Just want to raise awareness about this syndrome.